and welcome to another episode of True Crime Date Night. My name is Casey. I'm joined by my wife, Nikki.
Hey, everyone.
So what's tonight's episode about?
So tonight we're doing something a little bit different yet again. I actually had a ton of cancellations, which led to finding another true crime fan and a listener, and we're going to talk to her tonight. So go ahead and introduce yourself.
Hey, everyone. My name is Rebecca, and I'm a big fan, actually.
All right. Wow. Yeah, no, I'm really, really excited about this episode. All right. Well, let's get to it.
All right. So how do you usually get your true crime fix?
So I usually get my true crime fix through YouTube, documentaries like Netflix, Hulu. Really big on the YouTube one. Weirdly obsessed. But that's usually where I get it from. And definitely your podcast. I listen to it on the way to work, on the way back, trying to fall asleep. Literally always on it.
Oh, wow. Now you got me blushing. So have you always been into true crime, or when did that start?
True crime for me started about my freshman year, and it was like another move, didn't have a whole lot of friends, and I guess it really stemmed from Bones and NCIS and the shows my mom would watch, and I was just scrolling through YouTube, and I was like, hey, what's this about? And I was like, oh my God, my new world. I live here now.
That's awesome. I love that description. Okay, so what kind of cases catch your interest the most? Like missing persons, solved crimes?
It really bounces back and forth. So a lot of like unsolved ones really catch my attention, mainly because I'm the person that has to have answers. So it just really draws me in. And the ones that do have answers, but like it's not the person you're expecting. And it's just like, oh, wow. I need to watch out. Terrifying. So those usually catch my attention a lot.
No, that's fair. Those ones usually catch my attention too. As far as true crime goes, are there cases that you want to hear about that you are not currently getting enough of?
I would say like some of the like lesser known ones, I feel like it's a constant repeating of like big names like Jeffrey Dahmer and all those like really big everyone knows, and there's so much content over them, but like the one you did of the Schofield one, the lesser known ones, I'd want to hear more about because there's not a lot of content about that out there. And it's just like, we're focusing on the past and not like what's happening now.
Yeah, when it comes to Selena Roth, I actually didn't hear anything about that until you recommended it to us. And then right when I started digging into it is when they were about to have the hearing and the sentencing and all that stuff. So it was all really fortuitous. And we were super lucky to be able to get a hold of Selena's family and have them like want to talk about her case and want to talk about like what was happening, what had happened, all of that. So anytime you have someone who's willing to talk to you about those things, it adds another dimension. You don't feel as much like a creepy spectator. As far as her family goes, they were just happy to be able to tell her story. Because apparently all of the reporting that had happened before that had been kind of like painting her in a really, really poor light.
Yeah, and I hate that. I hate to hear that.
I hate victim blaming, 100%.
When you don't have like people stepping in and being like, hey, like this is who she was, this is how she was, people get away with the victim blaming so much more, and it's not fair. Like you don't get to know that person as a spectator versus when the family has the chance to come in and obviously have like emotional strength and just be able to put that out there for everyone. I think it's a lot more personal and a lot better.
It really is. And anytime a friend or a family member can kind of take that narrative back and say, this wasn't accurate, this is what actually happened, and this is what my loved one was actually like, I am for that. I would so much rather have every single true crime story told through the lens of someone who knows the people at the heart of it instead of just from, like a lot of times cases are written up essentially by one or two people, and then everything you hear about after that is people reading those things and just putting it in their own words and reprinting it.
Yeah, definitely. I think that was most prevalent during the interview with Miss Shirley Michener and just the attitude of the authorities against Brandon. And you know, luckily with the amount of people that were able to get to listen to the episode, it's starting to get a little bit more traction and people are like, no, like this wasn't just some guy. This was a son. This was someone that like mattered to people. And, you know, that's what it's all about, in my opinion.
Absolutely. I love Shirley so much. Every time I talk to her, every time I get an email from her, it's like talking to my grandmother. It's like talking to a member of my own family. She is so real. She is just the most genuine human being that I get the pleasure of talking to. She's just beyond fantastic, and she is always willing to give her time to make sure that people are listening and people understand that this is a thing that happened. And she still has questions, and she is still facing brick wall after brick wall, and it's disgusting. There is no reason that in America today we should ever have families setting up GoFundMes to solve cases. It shouldn't happen. And it does all the time, and it's infuriating. Families should not have to go out and like hire their own investigators to feel like they get answers to the death of their loved one. Like that is such a disgrace to me.
I definitely agree. I think making it more personal definitely opens a lot more doors than just taking it from a third person, because now you're just hitting wall after wall and you're not really getting answers and no one really cares because no one knows that story of that family member of like what this person was really like in their day to day. Hearing it from family makes it a lot more emotional and makes you kind of like sit back and think about it.
Yeah, it draws that personal connection, because if you don't feel like you have something in common with someone, or if you don't feel like you can relate to them, I don't think it's reasonable to expect people to care. That's often what happens, especially with like those really big name cases. Like anyone can name the top five most famous serial killers, but can you name any of their victims?
No, because at that point, it's been interviewed so many times that those names become numbers. Like 24 to 12 is just like the first person, the second person, the 24th person, but you don't have any names to them. And it's super unpersonal and like less cared about.
Yeah, you don't have those names. You don't have their history. You don't know them.
I think that's what I liked about the most when we did the LaBianca murders. Because when you were telling me the story, I had no idea it was just more, you know, victims of a crime. And it wasn't until you actually told me that they were tied to the Manson family, I'm like, oh my God, like obviously I've heard of the Manson family. But I've never heard of these people before. And it's because of that exactly. It's because it's numbers, and it wasn't, you know, Sharon Tate, you know, an actress and you know, like that. These are just people that were living and they fell victim. And, you know, through time and through the overtelling of the story, to kind of put it bluntly, their names kind of got lost. And it was only those that really like know the story and are passionate about it, really know about it.
And that's another thing, because as far as Lino and Rosemary LaBianca go, they have long been referred to as the lost, like the lost Manson family case. They have been overshadowed every single time by the spectacle that was Charles Manson and was his followers. And then they were also kind of overshadowed by the killings of Sharon Tate and all of the people at the Tate house. So they were kind of just like these remnants. And yeah, there's totally people who remember them or who remember their case and stuff like that, but it's not your casual true crime listener or reader that knows about those kinds of cases or knows any detail about those kinds of people.
And then, you know, like a guy like me that knows nothing about it, you know, it takes someone like you, like actually like bringing this forward and be like, oh wow, like this really did occur. And
it just makes it all a little bit more real.
Exactly. Yes, it makes it a lot more real.
What's a case that kind of sticks with you and why?
So there's really two cases. One being like the original Bloody Mary. And forgive me because I'm going to space out on all of these names. But she was a noblewoman, and she had this thing for torturing people of like lower status than her. So it started off with servants, and she had like this whole room designed for the torturing of these young girls. It was mainly girls. All of her victims were mainly female. Remember that much. And no one seemed to care because of her status until like she started upping it up to like more of the nobles' daughters. And they're like, yeah, we can't have that. You're taking it too far. And it's just like weird to think about like the game everyone associates now is like, oh, say it three times, Bloody Mary in the mirror, and this happens. I always thought that was like from a movie or a ghost story, not actual history. Wasn't something I was expecting.
So I'm pretty sure you're talking about Elizabeth Bathory.
That's the one.
Yeah, she for some reason believed that like bathing in the blood of young women would keep her looking youthful.
Yeah. Yeah. Bathing, and I think at some point she actually started drinking it. It was very weird.
I think it's interesting you mentioned that you always thought it was from like a movie or something. It wasn't based in history. That draws me to our last episode, and we said it a few times, like as much as we think like fiction can get like dark and gloomy and twisted, it's always the real life stuff that really is the dark and the twisted part of human nature. And each episode we do, I just am a little bit more surprised at the absolute villainy that people are capable of.
Like, I knew history was dark, but I didn't think it was
that kind of dark.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting that kind of dark. And for no reason. Just because she had a wild thought, like, hey, if I bathe in this blood, I could be young forever.
So I just looked it up, and it says that all of the accounts and rumors that she bathed in the blood and or drank the blood were recorded quite some time after her actual death, so they're not super reliable. But she was definitely known for killing at least four of her servants.
Mm-hmm.
And it says up to possibly, quote, hundreds of just young girls. So definite torture, definite homicide. As far as the bathing and drinking, that's up for debate.
And another thing that like just blows my mind is like, how do you get away with possible hundreds of murder and it only mattering when suddenly the nobles' daughters are going missing?
I think that's something that still happens. I mean, how many cases are there where dozens of sex workers are going missing and nobody notices? Until suddenly there's one 14, 15-year-old girl who's walking to the grocery store and never comes back home. And then all of a sudden they're like, oh, wait, something's weird here. What has happened? Like, that still happens. There will always be people who are kind of thought of as on the outskirts of, quote, polite society. And those are people that generally go unreported.
And that reminds me of, like, another series that I had watched, The Toy Box Killer. And just, like, he had this whole, like, trailer of just torturous things. And he was doing it to sex workers. And one escaped. One got away and, like, told the police everything and nothing happened. And I think it wasn't until, I think, another one escaped, I believe. Not 100% sure, but she went to the police and they found the videos and brought another girl in who had no memory of it and then showed her, and like everything came back. But like, how is it going to take two people to escape and you're not going to listen to one of them, and the other one you're going to be like, yeah, totally makes sense?
Because unfortunately not all victims are created equally, not all survivors are listened to the same way, and it's horrific.
None of it's right. None of that should happen.
Yeah, no. Not a fan.
So the other one that stuck with me is the Casey Anthony case, where it happened to such a young girl and she didn't deserve it. She didn't do anything. There was no reason for it. From my understanding, the grandparents would have gladly taken her in. It was just a pointless murder for no reason. And anything that has to do with children just makes me that much more angry, because they can't fight back. There's not a whole lot they can do to fight back and get away from the situation. Now, obviously, I'm still upset both with any age, but children, it just hurts a little bit more, and it just makes me so much more angry.
Child cases, I think, suck even more, because a lot of times it's family. So it's these people that you are supposed to literally trust with your life. These are people that you depend on for everything. And so to add that extra layer of betrayal, like, my soul literally can't handle it. So what kind of podcasts are you listening to currently? Feel free to name drop. I need to add to my list.
To be completely honest, you are the only podcast I listen to. I've never really gotten into podcasts. So when I came across yours, I was like, oh, okay. And then I've just never branched out. So you're the only podcast I actually listening to.
I'm super shaken by that, because I was really hoping to get some awesome recommendations from you, but now I realize that it's going to go the other way, because I read that on average, like, the standard podcast listener has like 6 that they really like, that they listen to all the time, and that's what's in their list. And currently in my list, I checked earlier, I've got like 87. Most of them I'm fully caught up on, and these are ones that have like hundreds of episodes, because I'm a binger.
I mean, to be fair, the entire origin of our podcast was because you were complete with listening to podcasts. So you said, okay, I'm just going to do my own. And I said, okay, I'm going to help you with that. And that's how True Crime Date Night was born. So
it's true. I had run out of content 100%. It was during COVID. The kids were doing distance learning. So I was just at home 24/7, like sitting at a table, helping our kids with schoolwork. And like, there was one ear listening to podcasts all day and the other ear being like, yes, and this is where you take your one and this is the next step. So yeah, maybe that's just me. Maybe I'm the weirdo.
No, I think you're just very passionate.
I wouldn't say weird, because it's funny how we can just be sitting there listening to murder happening while going about our daily lives. I don't know why I've just never gotten into podcasts. I think it's A, I've never like explored that side, and B, I had YouTube. And then I was like, just, it was actually, yours was actually recommended to me. And I was like, do it. Do the only podcast I listen to. But outside of that, it's all YouTube.
Okay, so we're going to fix that later. But in the meantime, what are your YouTube channels?
Mr. Ballin, Bailey Sarian, Coffee House Crime, That Chapter, love his voice in that one, and Unsolved Network. I love all of those. Those regularly like rotate. I'm pretty much caught up on all of them.
Gotcha. Okay. So I have definitely heard of Bailey. She's huge. I love her. And I have no clue how she is capable of telling a cohesive story while doing a full face of dead on makeup. But I am impressed.
I will never understand it. She loses me at like step 3, and that's just concealer. Like, oh, no.
Honestly, if step 3 is still concealer, I'm already lost. I'm like, let's just put on some kind of lotion and some mascara and call it a day. I can't do it. But she's amazing. I love it. Her storytelling is fantastic. I love how angry she gets. I'm a fan.
My favorite catchphrase, get better idols. Like, for the win.
Absolutely. The others I am unfamiliar with, so I'm going to have to look into those, though. Actually, I think I know the Unsolved Network.
It's done with Ryan and Shane.
Oh, wait. Don't they have, like, little clip shows?
Yes, they do. They have, like...
I love them. No, they did one on Ghost, too.
Yeah. So they do the puppets, the ghost, and then the Unsolved Networks and the mystery side of it.
I literally have theirs saved on our Hulu. Now I'm going to have to look into their YouTube channels, because I actually knew they had YouTube channels, but because they're also available on like Hulu, I just skip straight to Hulu.
Definitely go for their YouTube channels, because like there's these weird like in-between commentary that just kill me on the inside. Just love it so much.
I definitely need a little bit more of those guys in my life. Podcasts get really dark really fast.
And then that's another one about that chapter. So he has a bit of an accent, which is always fun to listen to, but he always tells like these weird puns at random moments. And you can't help but laugh. He keeps it very lighthearted, so you don't get like too upset in between. But his commentary to like keep it lighthearted and just kind of like keep the story going is definitely worth listening to. It's brings me a little bit of joy in the day.
You had me at accent. I'm a big fan. Like if I'm listening to something, the voice has to be, it's got to be there, or I'm just like off somewhere else doing something else. I can't focus.
His voice is definitely one that captures your attention.
All right. Well, you've definitely added to my list. What about documentaries? I think we were talking about that earlier.
Documentaries. So there's two that, now that I'm here, I can't remember the names, but there was the one for JonBenet, and then there was this other one. It threw my mind for a loop, but there was like a family friend that's like manipulating the family. No, it was crazy. It's completely wild, but manipulating the family, convincing this young girl of like aliens, and she has to get pregnant with this guy's kids, and he keeps taking her away and they get her back. It's wild. And I'm like, how as adults do you allow this to happen? And then you find out later, like the communication that was failing and just allowed it to continuously happen. Personally, I'm not a mom, but if I was a mom, I'm a very aggressive mom. There's no way I would knowingly allow this to happen to any child, for that matter. Like, not even as a mom, but like to any child. That's just...
it's absolutely bonkers. You are talking about Abducted in Plain Sight. I watched that when it first came out and I was just floored.
I watched that on a work day and I did not sleep. Like, I watched it and then I was very confused and rewatched it. And like daylight came and I was like, oh, I messed up, but I still don't understand. I don't understand any of this. How could you? I don't understand. I wasted like 2 days trying to figure that out. Still haven't.
Yeah, there were a lot of things that could have happened that didn't happen. But to be, I don't want to say to be fair, but the perpetrator there was extremely manipulative. Extremely manipulative. And he had everyone around him believing everything he said for a really long time, even things that you would really think would flash some massive red flags. They were just like, oh, like he's a good guy. He wouldn't lie to us. So like what he's saying has to be true. He wouldn't steer us wrong. And then that's exactly what he did.
The charisma that he had. And then at some point, putting shame in both of the parents so neither of them are talking to each other is like in the most awful way possible. Well done.
Yeah, that takes a skill set that I flat out don't have. It's a skill set that thankfully a lot of people don't have. Yeah, that one was incredibly baffling. Just like, from start to finish, I was just like, what? And then it just kept getting worse. So like episode one, you're like, oh my God. And then two rolls around and you're like, wait, what? And then three, and you're like, how did that? And it never gets better. By the end of it, you're just like mind blown.
Completely. I think the only upside of that entire just horrible, traumatic and like interaction is that she survived. At that point, that is the only silver lining because that messed up.
She survived and she is a speaker. She's an activist. Like,
so she became really strong out of it. But that's got to leave its marks. And I feel so bad.
How about crime fiction? So movies or shows or something that is like loosely about crime, or it's about crime, but crimes that didn't actually happen.
I think one of my biggest problems about shows is that like I never finish a TV show, which is really bad. Like I'll start one and then I'll start a new one. Then I don't finish the other one. But the only ones that I've honestly been consistent with would be Bones, which I finally finished, Criminal Minds, and NCIS with Gibbs. Very important to distinguish. Those are like the true crime fictions because 9 out of 10 times, with the exception of NCIS, there's a happy ending. There's a lot of sad parts in NCIS. It rips at my soul. But those three are generally the ones I gravitate towards the most.
That makes sense. Those are super accessible. So it's pretty much just those three for the crime fiction. One of the things I was thinking of when you were on your way over is Broadchurch. So it is crime-based. It is a fictitious crime, but he's a detective and he's trying to solve the death of a young boy. Not super young. I think he was like a teenager. But it's great. So it goes through like all the investigative stuff and all of the storytelling, and you get to learn who this kid was before his untimely death, and he solves it, and it's amazing. But I thought of you because it's not a ton of episodes. It's a BBC show. So each season is only like 6 to maybe 10 episodes long, but they're all amazing.
I don't know why, but when you like started to explain it, I thought of Dexter. Dexter is such a great show and it has such a great storyline, and it's like, he is a murderer, but he's a murderer for the people. I enjoy that part.
Dexter is a really hard one for me to wrap my soul around because I like the idea. I like the execution. I hate what it spawned in real life, because there are at least two cases who said that they were inspired by Dexter. And that for me is just like beyond comprehension. Like, there should be a very firm line between fiction and reality. And so when people who are not of sound mind, taking like beloved works of fiction, no matter how weird or dark or strange they are, and turning them into like real life horror, real life crime, I take issue with that. But it's not the fault of Dexter. It's not the fault of the creators. It's not the fault of the writers. It's just really messed up people taking these ideas to places where they shouldn't be.
And that kind of makes me think of another case. It didn't have to do with Dexter, but like blurring that line of like fiction and reality is the story with like the three young teenagers, and they attempted to murder their best friend for Slenderman. Like, fully convinced Slenderman was telling them to do it, took her out into the woods and like stabbed her multiple times. Like, I want to say upper 20 times. And she survived for the sole purpose, I believe someone was like going for a walk through the woods, found her barely breathing, was like, oh, snapdragons. Awesome.
No, I'm familiar with that one. There's a couple of really good documentaries on that one.
What are they? I want to watch this because I just saw a YouTube video. No surprise there.
I know that HBO has one, and I think it's just called Slenderman. Honestly, if you just Google Slenderman documentaries, you'll find them. There's a couple, and honestly, like, they're all decent. But yeah, honestly, Slenderman's not even like an urban legend. That's like, it's literally like an internet famous, like, cryptid.
Yeah, it's just like a spooky story someone came up with and was like, it's very weird.
But that whole case was really frustrating.
Like, that's your friend. What in your mind goes, you know what? I'm going to kill my best friend today. Like, what?
Not even just I'm going to kill my best friend. Like, I'm going to sacrifice my best friend to go live in the woods with a fictitious monster.
That I've never seen.
Power of imagination. All right, so it looks like our time is running a little short, but before we go, did you have any questions for us?
No, I don't think I have any questions besides, like, can I come do this again? This was fun.
This was fantastic, and I'd love to have you anytime.
All right, with that, this has been another episode of True Crime Date Night. You can follow us on social media at our Facebook or Instagram page. We also have a website, truecrimedatenight.com, for more information. Thank you so much for coming. It was great having you.
I had a lot of fun.
And with that, thank you. Have a wonderful night, everyone.
Good night.